Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, September 8, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home office in New York. We got sad news on Sunday night, just before the start of the Sunday night baseball game. Hall of Famer Lou Brock, the Cardinals base-stealing icon, passed away at age 81. We're going to be talking about him with Tim Kirchen coming up. Marley Rivera broke the news that Major League Baseball is going to let players from Puerto Rico wear number 21 on Wednesday to honor Roberto Clemente. Other players will be allowed to wear a decal of number 21 as well. And Tim and I are going to talk about the implications of that. The Yankees are in an absolute free fall.
Bouncer to first, and it's booted by Voight. Everybody's safe, and a run will score. First pitch fastball, and a bouncer gets by Voight into right field. And two runs are going to come in to score. Telez around to third. Guerrero takes one the other way for a two-run single, and it's a one-run game. And he lines the ball to left field for a base hit. The game is tied. Guerrero had to see if it would drop. He stops at third. The Blue Jays have come all the way back. And Shaw rips one into center field, a base hit. Guerrero is in to score. Gurriel is in to score. Around to third, VR, and it's 8-6 Blue Jays.
That's my friend Dan Shulman on the Blue Jays television network. The Yankees began the bottom of the sixth inning with a 6-2 lead, and they allowed 10 runs, requiring 67 pitches. And so the Blue Jays win the game. And I saw a headline, and I wish I could remember the writer who did the story, but there was a great line. I think it was the New York Post. The Blue Jays are the American League's best New York team because, of course, they're playing in Buffalo. As of now, the Blue Jays, two games ahead of the Yankees in the wild card race. The Yankees, a game and a half ahead of Baltimore for the eighth spot. Two games ahead of Seattle. They are hanging by a thread, and they are playing really poorly. The Padres and the Rockies were tied 0-0 going into the 10th inning, and this is what happened for the Padres.
Jorge Mateo will pitch, run at first base.
Tell you what, it would be really nice to see somebody split a gap here and watch that kid run.
So here is Profar, who is grounded out to third, grounded out to second, and last time up, single to center. Profar lines it into right field. That's going to get in and roll towards the corner. Mateo headed for third. Mateo be waved around by Hoffman. The throw to the plate will be late, and the Padres will walk it off in San Diego tonight. Jerks and Profar with a base hit. And oh, watch Jorge Mateo run. Padres win it 1-0.
Taylor, I don't know if you watched that highlight. Oh, my God, how fast is Jorge Mateo rounding the bases to score that winning run? That was really fun.
He's gliding around the bases, and everyone knew it, too. It was going down. It's a lot of fun. These Padres, man, they're awesome.
They did get bad news yesterday. Eric Hosmer suffered a fractured index finger trying to bunt. The estimate last night was that he'll be out 2 to 6 weeks, and a lot of it will come down to pain management. Zach Plesac is back in the Cleveland rotation, and yesterday he was excellent.
Got him looking. Good fastball by Plesac. He's rolling tonight, folks. Four Ks through four scoreless innings.
So Cleveland wins yesterday, and as of this morning, Cleveland and the White Sox tied for the American League Central lead with Minnesota game behind. In a wild game between the Phillies and Mets, Gene Segura came through for the Phillies in the 10th.
The Phillies have not done as well.
There's a line drive out toward left center field. On the run is Nimmo. He's not going to get it. It's gone! A two-run home run for Segura. And the Phillies retake the lead. Wow. It's a 9-7 game here in the top of the 10th inning. That was a bullet.
Oakland's Sean Murphy got a big hit for the Athletics.
Murphy hits one to center, and that's hit well. Springer going back. Springer still going back, and at that, baby is gone. 2-0 A's on a long home run by Murphy.
Glenn Kuiper with the call on the Athletics television network. At the end of the day, the Athletics leading the Astros in the American League West by 4.5 games. Now, before we move on to talk to Tim Kirchen and to Sarah Langs, Fantasy Focus Football is back weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Mike Clay are here to help you dominate your fantasy league. Watch the show on YouTube, Twitter, or the ESPN app. And listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to draft your team, compete with your friends, and take home the crown by signing up now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Seamheads rejoice.
Noodle alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, we got a lot to get to today. The Yankees in an absolute free fall. What an interesting weekend for Mike Rizzo. Getting thrown out of the ballpark by an umpiring crew during the course of the game. But boy, it's been a tough week for the Hall of Fame. Last week, we got word that Tom Seaver passed away, of course. And it's just a few days later, Lou Brock, another Hall of Famer, passed away. You wrote a really nice piece about this on Sunday evening. I met him once. I think I interviewed him once, but I didn't really get to know him at all. What were your interactions like with him?
Well, there was one that stood out. I took my son Jeff to Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame induction, and we saw Lou Brock in the pro shop of the golf course there. So Lou and I start to talk, and he spends 20 minutes with me and my son talking to us about baseball. And says, "You have a great smile. Make sure everyone sees that smile as often as possible. A smile can disarm people better than anyone. And we don't smile enough in this world." That's what Lou Brock told my 10-year-old son. And it's all true. And I thought, you know, Lou Brock's got better things to do than to spend 20 minutes with me and a 10-year-old. But he did, because that's who he is. And when Lou Brock died, my son texted me. He said, "Before I wrote anything, before I said anything," he said, "I'll never forget that conversation." That's what Lou Brock did for people. So whenever I see or think about Lou Brock the rest of my life, I will smile, because that's what he did for us that day.
Is it possible that the trade that he was involved in, which incredibly involved these two rivals, the Cubs and the Cardinals, is that trade arguably the most one-sided deal in history? It was the Ernie Broglio going from the Cardinals to the Cubs. And thereafter, Ernie Broglio in his career with the Cubs, 7-19 with a 5.40 ERA. And Lou Brock went the other way, had a tremendous finish to that 1964 season. Cardinals win the World Series. He goes on and has over 3,000 hits and sets the record for stolen bases. Was that the most one-sided trade in baseball history?
Frank Robinson from Milt Pappas was pretty bad, but I think the Brock trade is for this reason: the championships they won. Buster, I'm a little bit older than you, so I vividly remember 1967 World Series and 68 World Series, how great Lou Brock was. He was basically the best player on the field for those two World Series combined. Go look at those postseason numbers by Lou Brock. He changed games with the way he ran the bases. As you know, he always went in feet first, because that was the quickest way for him, the safest way for him, but no one slid into second harder than Lou Brock. And he was such a good player. He had tremendous power. And Buster, that stolen base record lasted, I mean, he broke a record that had lasted for 70 years. That's how impressive it was what he did. And I think people overrate him as a player. I think he's underrated, especially with the way he changed the game with his legs. He's the only player, well, he's the first player to steal 100 bases after turning age 30, which really tells you something.
You know, it's amazing. And I thought about this weekend. When you watch Lou Brock played in his era, I thought he and Joe Morgan were two guys who had that great base stealing arrogance. Like, you felt like Lou Brock knew that he was going to steal second. The guy most recently who I've seen that with was Billy Hamilton, who just, you know, I remember talking to Billy when he was playing in the minor leagues, and I think he stole 6 or 7 bases in one game. And I asked him, you know, how often did you go on the first pitch? And he said all but one. Like, he didn't care, you know, from his perspective, if they were going to, you know, try to throw you out. Lou Brock seemed to have that. And I loved the tweet from Johnny Bench over the weekend talking about how trying to throw out Lou Brock was one of his greatest challenges.
Right. He was a very proud man of what he did, Buster. So Joe Torre told me once on the final day of the 1970 season, Joe had 99 RBI. He's going to drive in 100 runs on the last game of the season. He looks at the lineup and Lou Brock is not in the lineup on the final day. And it was an important game. And Lou said, I'm not feeling very well. I'm not going to play today, Joe. And Joe said, Lou, you have to play. I need 100 RBI. You need to get on base. So he looks at the stat sheet and Lou Brock has 99 strikeouts. And he was so proud that he did not want to strike out 100 times. So he sat out the final game of the season. Now, maybe you can't look at that any other way than meaningless game, and I'm not striking out 100 times. I'm better than that. In a lot of ways, that's who Lou Brock was, tremendously prideful in the way he played, but especially the way he would steal a base.
So, Tim, over the weekend, I wrote in my Sunday column about how in the use of pitchers, and this was actually, I wrote it in the aftermath of Tom Seaver passing away, in the use of pitchers, the analytics are driving the sport off a ledge, because the analytics that are being used suggest that, you know what, it's better to bring in this parade of relievers and they all throw 98 and they all throw curveballs down the zone and they strike out. The strikeout rate for the entire sport this year is higher than Roger Clemens' strikeout rate in his career. That's where we are. And I feel like that Lou Brock, you know, it would be another example of a player who in this era would not exist, because I'm looking at the, you know, right in front of him, his baseball in front of me, his baseball reference page. He got thrown out a decent amount. Like, you know that front offices now, if you don't steal successfully 80 to 85%, they're basically saying, we don't want you to run. I don't think Lou Brock would have been given a green light, Tim.
Absolutely not, Buster. And he didn't walk enough, so therefore he wasn't an effective player. What people do, what you can't measure, is what Lou Brock did and other great base stealers back then to a starting pitcher. Sandy Koufax basically acknowledged, that guy shook me up. He bothered me when he was on the bases. I wasn't exactly the same when he got on, because it annoyed me so much that he could steal so easily. That matters, Buster. And yes, you don't want to give away an out on the bases. But with the way we run the bases today, we give out outs all over the place, and no one seems bothered by that. But you get caught stealing a few times, oh, you can't run. You don't walk enough, oh, you're not good enough. This is where the analytics are not measuring anything. And the disruption that Lou Brock caused by being on the bases all the time is something that mattered but cannot truly be calculated.
He led the National League in getting thrown out in 7 different seasons. The first year that he went over 60 for stolen bases, 1965, he stole 63 bases and he was caught 27 times. The current front offices, they would shut that down. They would basically say, you're not allowed to run anymore. And it's, I have Sandy Alderson's voice in my head saying, it's entertainment. That's what we're selling. We're selling entertainment. So maybe something for folks to think about, you know, where we're going is sometimes. Some analytics, to me, generally speaking, I love them. But boy, in different parts of the game, I just can't stand it. Another Hall of Famer being honored this week, a really cool gesture. Marley Rivera was the first to report on this. Major League Baseball is going to let players from Puerto Rico to honor Roberto Clemente will wear his number 21 in games on Wednesday. Other players will be allowed to wear a number 21 decal. Tim, I really feel like this is just one more step toward that day when they retire number 21 in perpetuity the way they did with number 42 for Jackie Robinson. What do you think?
Yes, and I think they should. Now, let's not mistake that Jackie Robinson was even more important in baseball history than Roberto Clemente.
Yep.
But if we're trying to honor our greatest players ever, and if we're trying to show exactly who did what and at what time, that guy was a hero. And he wasn't just a hero because of his baseball. We know what happened. And I think it's great that baseball is doing this. We're just too staid in this game. We need to present it in a different way. And let's not forget, Buster, he's the greatest defensive right fielder of all time. He's the greatest throwing outfielder I've ever seen. And he's one of the great hitters we've ever seen. I asked Larry Bowe once, who hit the ball harder than anyone you ever played against? He looked at me, chuckled. He laughed. He goes, Roberto Clemente. Who else? That's what he said. That's how good Roberto Clemente was. And given the entire body of work, I think it's wonderful what's going to happen on Wednesday. And I hope it becomes something permanent.
I think just if you remember that the first year, 1997, when Jackie Robinson's number 42 was retired, initially, a lot of players didn't participate. A lot of players didn't wear 42. And then over time, it got to be a popular thing. And look, there's no question. Alex Rodriguez, with roots Dominican Republic, said on our air last night, like, Roberto Clemente's a hero to him. You mentioned you're a little bit older than me, so I'm curious. I do have a very specific memory hearing on the radio at age 8 that Clemente had been killed in that plane crash on New Year's Eve in 1972. What do you remember about that?
Well, I was in the living room, and my father walked down the steps. Now, my father was a great baseball man, tremendous feel for the sport, and a really good player in his day. I didn't see my dad cry very often in my time. And he walked downstairs. He's the happiest man in the world, too. And I said, Pop, what's wrong? And then he looked at me and he told me what happened. And I just started to cry. It was terrible. It was like, oh, my gosh, how could that happen? So I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when my father told me that Roberto Clemente died. Again, I was old enough to understand it and appreciate it and appreciate him, but that was just a terrible moment in my life and, of course, in the lives of so many others.
So the New York Yankees might be in trouble. They started this season 16-6, and since then, 5-14. And Tim, after hearing concern in the voice of Aaron Boone on Saturday and on Sunday, the game they played yesterday, oh, my God. They're ahead 6-2, and they allow a 10-run inning, which is just full of walks and misplays. How much trouble do you think the Yankees are in at this point?
Well, I think they're in big trouble, and I think they're going to be lucky if they get the 8th seed at this point. Now, if you look at the rest of the teams, they should get the 8th seed. But I watched that 6th inning last night, Buster. 67 pitches. That was torture. I'm not a Yankee fan, obviously, but that was torture for any Yankee fan to watch. Adam Ottavino is a really good pitcher, and he got clobbered. That team looked dead. And this, after what Boone said over the weekend, and it was so clear, 10 games in the next 20 against a team they have to beat, the Blue Jays, and then to lose a lead like that and lose it the way that they did, playing poorly in that inning, that made it even worse. So I still think they're going to make the playoffs, but they are in deep trouble right now because they got to get everybody healthy and they got to get everybody hitting in order to do damage with the Rays, the Indians, the White Sox, the Twins even, certainly the A's, and maybe even the Astros. That is a loaded group in the American League, and the Yankees are in trouble against all those teams right now. They got to get some people back.
And Aaron Judge is getting healthy. Giancarlo Stanton is getting healthy. They seem to be making progress. But I got to tell you, a couple thoughts from yesterday. One, to read the post-game comments where there were conversations among the Yankee players about how the pitchers couldn't see the signs. And that you know, suggested that was an issue. Tim, I just cringed. Like, I hated that mindset because I'm thinking to myself, yeah, okay, so if the pitcher can't see the signs because the lights in Buffalo aren't that great, that probably means that the hitting conditions for the hitters aren't that great. And they're all playing under the same rules. And, you know, that whole thing about being able to see the signs, that's not a new problem in baseball. Like, they figured out a way to deal with that with nail polish. And the other thing, too, that's I think really distinguishes this year's team from last year's team, we rightly gave so much credit to the B teams, so to speak, on the Yankees in the way that they performed when all these other guys got hurt. Those guys generally, Tim, this year have not done that well.
Buster, they're B players for a reason. First off, being a B major leaguer is pretty damn good. Let's understand that.
Yep.
But B major leaguers usually do not carry a team 2 years in a row. There's a reason you're a fourth or fifth outfielder or a second DH or second first baseman, all right? It's because it's a really hard game to play, and to do that 2 years in a row is really hard to do. And as far as excuses about not seeing the signs, sorry, Buster, I'm not going there either. There are no excuses in this season. Everything is off kilter, and you have to deal and adapt and be flexible with everything. And to blame the signs because we can't see in Buffalo, sorry, that's not going to fly.
So I mentioned Mike Rizzo had a really interesting weekend. First, we got word that he got a 3-year extension. You know, he came into the year with just 1 year left on his contract, so he gets a 3-year deal. He says now that his priority is to work out a deal with manager Dave Martinez. And then on Sunday, he got ejected for yelling at the umpires from a luxury suite in Atlanta, with longtime crew chief Joe West telling a reporter after the game, enough is enough. I wouldn't take that from a player. I wouldn't take that from a manager. If it was Donald Trump, I'd eject him too, but I'd still vote for him. The one thing I'd say is this is not Mike Rizzo's first interactions with umpires. He kind of goes out of the box from where other GMs would go, Tim.
Yeah, and he's not afraid. Mike Rizzo's been in the game forever. He learned a lot of this from his dad, who was in the game forever, and he's not putting up with it. But neither is Joe West. It's just amazing to me that a guy was in a private box and got chucked out of a game. Now, there's no excuse for any of this. You can't throw a guy out from that spot, in my mind. However, Buck Showalter told me during that fanless game in 2016-15 against the White Sox, he said, we had to all be really careful what we said, because not only could the other team hear everything we said because it was silent in the ballpark, the umpires could hear everything we said, so we had to be extra, extra careful. And maybe Mike Rizzo wasn't being extra careful, but I don't think he thought he had to be from that distance away and not in uniform.
I know you agree with me that the most fascinating race as we go down the stretch is not the Yankees, it's the American League Central. Because you have three teams basically running neck and neck, Cleveland and Chicago tied, with Minnesota just one game behind them. And because of the new playoff structure this year, this 2020 playoff structure, there's a lot at stake here, Tim. Like, you obviously want to win the division, and then you get home field. And then you would hope that if you finish second in the division, then you would be the number four seed. It looks like in all likelihood. But if you finish third among these three teams, you're going to be the seventh seed. And so you will not have, you know, theoretical home field. Who's going to win the Central?
Well, I think the Indians are going to win the Central because their pitching has been so good. And for all that we blasted Zach Plesac about, and he deserved every bit of it, his ERA is 1.32. He won again last night. Shane Bieber is unhittable at this point. And I love the White Sox, and they're going to roll into the playoffs, and I want no part of them in the playoffs if I'm another team. Twins are making the playoffs. They won 100 games, and when they get healthy again, they can hit the ball out of the ballpark with anyone. But I think the pitching of the Indians is just that good that I think it's in a very, very close race between three teams. I think they're going to win.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Great to talk to you as always.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you soon. See ya.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, we'll start with this. I was asking Tim Kirkchin, who's going to win that crazy American League Central?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm going to go with what I want to happen, even if I'm not 100% sure it will happen. But I want the White Sox to win this division. I just think that would be so much fun. And I feel like we talked about entering the year, how it seemed like they were a year away. And with the new playoff format and everything else, it feels like they actually are getting their chance here. And I think they might be the most overall complete team there, with the fact that the Twins offense has not been what it was last year. We know the Indians offense is really not there. They have better pitching, but I think the White Sox might have the best mesh of everything.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Although it's interesting, and just in talking with general managers, managers, coaches in the last couple of weeks, they've talked about how Cleveland would be the team you would not want to face in the postseason. Yes. Because Shane Bieber is that good. Like, he is, we think of those postseasons that were dominated by one pitcher, Oral Hershiser, 1988. Mike Scott, you know, with his incredible performances back in 1986 before the Astros got knocked out and everyone was afraid of him, Madison Bumgarner. Bieber looks like he could be that guy in the postseason where he just completely shuts down teams from day to day. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is one.
So Kyle Hendricks went 8 innings yesterday, allowing just one run to the Cardinals, and really felt like a crucial win for the Cubs there with how they'd played against the Cardinals in the previous 4 games of that 5-game series. It's the second time that he's gone at least 8 innings this year. He had a complete game shutout on opening day. He and Aaron Nola are the only pitchers to go at least 8 innings in multiple outings this year, and neither of Nola's were complete games. And for Hendricks, it was the 8th time since the start of 2018 that he's gone at least 8 innings and allowed one run or fewer, which is most in the majors in that span. And he has 3 starts like that against the Cardinals in his career, which are the most in the majors since the start of 2014. And if they're going to win that division, if they're going to go deep in the playoffs, they need ace number one and ace number two with Kyle Hendricks and Yu Darvish. And Hendricks showed us again last night why he can be ace number two or number one, wherever you want to define him.
Number two is 10.
So the Blue Jays scored 10 runs in the 6th inning against the Yankees last night. It was the Blue Jays' first 10-run inning since August 31st, 2010, an inning that was capped off by a Jose Bautista home run, which was his 43rd of the season, just for a little throwback there. And it was the first time the Yankees allowed 10 or more runs in an inning since May 23rd, 2015 against the Rangers, when the Rangers scored 10 in the 3rd off of CC Sabathia and Esmiel Rogers. But it was the first time the Yankees' bullpen allowed 10 or more in an inning since June 22nd, 1932, against the St. Louis Browns. That was also the 6th inning last night. It did not include any home runs because this was 1932 baseball, but it was capped off by a triple.
Number one.
Number one is 21. So I feel like I may be setting a record for how many consecutive weeks I come on this podcast and talk about Fernando Tatis Jr., but I'm going to keep doing it because he's having this absolutely outstanding season. So 21 is his age, and he has 3.1 WAR on Fangraphs right now, which is 0.7 more than any other position player. And he has 2.8 on Baseball Reference, which is just 0.2 behind Mookie Betts for most among position players. The point here is that it's time to start talking about the MVP award with him. No player has ever won an MVP in a season where he was 21 at the end of the season. So when he was 21 years old for the whole season, as Tatis will be the youngest MVP ever. The current youngest is Vita Blue, who was the youngest of four guys to won in a season where they were 22. So Vita Blue turned 22 in July of that season, so he's the youngest. The other 22-year-old MVPs, Bryce Harper in 2015, Johnny Bench in 1970, and Stan Musial in 1943. And there have been five 21-year-olds to finish second in MVP voting, according to Elias. Mike Trout was the most recent to do that in 2012. Also, Alex Rodriguez in 1996, Al Kaline in 1955, Eddie Matthews in 1953, and Bob Feller in 1940. And I really think that Tatis is going to do something historic this year, as he's been doing practically every night.
Yeah, he would have to completely collapse down the stretch to not win the award, because I think in part he's gotten so much hype, which is going to help with the voters. Like, he is top of mind every single day, it feels like, because he's playing so well. And so he's got a huge lead, and it's hard to imagine, you know, maybe if he got hurt or something like that, where he wouldn't win the award. Real quick before you go, do you think the Yankees are in trouble?
It really, you know, before yesterday, I thought maybe it was a little overblown, but after seeing that, and obviously that's a bad inning, that's just a blip, you know, it gets away from you, but it does feel like, you know, I know that people were talking over the last few days, the next man up hasn't stepped up. I think that was something that Michael Kay said on TV a couple days ago. It really feels like it's very hard to do this when your team has been hurt for basically 2 years straight. And some of the contributors, like Gary Sanchez and others, just aren't contributing. So I do think it's concerning. I'm not sure that the Mariners or any of those other teams that are beyond that eighth seed in the American League are going to come and, you know, overtake the Yankees. But I do think it's pretty concerning down the stretch. And you have to wonder how that three-game series would look for them.
Yeah, I'm shocked with Gary Sanchez with how he's, 48 strikeouts and 100 plate appearances, or some crazy number like that. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Coming in with Sterling at StirRide73. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, I haven't heard anyone mention Teoscar Hernandez in the MVP discussion. Would you place him in the top 10 currently?" And then he followed up with, "Never mind, jinxed it. Sorry, Teoscar. Get healthy soon."
It's interesting. I'd love to hear from Sterling. He can tweet us again and tell us whether or not he really believes in superstitions, or is just sort of making an aside right there. Because let me tell you something. There are people absolutely believe in that. Taylor, you one of those? You think if you send in a tweet asking questions like that about a particular player got hurt, that you would somehow have had something to do with that?
Absolutely not. My friends get on me. They call me the human jinx, but I don't believe in such sorcery.
No, I'm with you. I just, no. Not related, but I get 40% of the world will bark at me if I tweet out after five innings that somebody's got a no-hitter because they're convinced I've jinxed it.
Damn it, Buster. I'll keep an eye on that for you. John Buell is up next at JBuell19. He writes in, "A-Rod made an interesting comment on Sunday about the Padres maybe getting the MVP, the Rookie of the Year in the NL, with Jose Abreu seemingly leading the pack after winning Player of the Month and Luis Robert being ridiculous. Is a sweep in the AL possible too?"
Yes, there's no question. Both of those guys in position to win their awards, depending on how they finish.
Last one up for today, Ja Tai Joe writes in, "With all three divisions in the AL being led by a team that was not the preseason favorite, how would you rank the three leaders based on talent, watchability, and likelihood of holding on to win their respective divisions?"
Easily American League Central one. I think because, you know, idiots like me before the season started, we're talking up the Yankees so much that the American League East is probably second. Oakland is leading Houston by 4.5 game, and that division seems like it's put to bed.
Yeah, a lot of Yankees come up and it's over here on this podcast. I'm not mad about it, though. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter.
Yeah, how
Thanks
about you? You know, you got the Orioles. Who would have guessed that we'd be talking in the last 3 weeks of the season about the Yankees having to fend off the Orioles, Tigers, and Mariners for the playoffs.
It's pretty
That's
crazy.
Insane.
I know. And the Mariners surging. Look out for them. Dave Schoenfield hyped right now. Let's go.
I know. Geez, yeah, he probably is going to take a week off and, you know, go out and hang outside the ballpark and be just screaming and listening to the radio, cheering on his team.
I can see it.
All right. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Tim, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day. Now, before we go, I want you to listen to a little bit of Lou Brock's Hall of Fame acceptance speech. Give a listen.
To this day, I believe that I somehow remain true to my inner feelings. Why so many of my peer groups lost their own self of themselves in the turmoil and anxiety of those years. I used to seek out those who shared my views about baseball. And if my peers shared my views, I was open up and speak my language. If they didn't, I would only speak theirs. Upon leaving college, I, along with my peer group, realized that we had to make a choice. I made a choice to follow my dream and to become a Major League Baseball player. Upon entering the big leagues, I discovered first a joy in learning and then a sense of accomplishment, not only in reaching milestones, but also in leadership. I tried to take baseball with me everywhere I would go, but it often seemed out of place with my newfound friend. I found it extremely difficult to explain why the pursuit of excellence and the desire to excel were very special to me. During the heydays of my career, I discovered that there are three factors which cause one to sustain any kind of success. The first one is the ability to put it all together. Many times you hear that expression, nobody ever tell you what exactly it means. Many players can run, many can hit, many can throw, but when they put it all together, the media refer to them as superstars. Determination was the other factor to remain at the top. One must believe that he could be the very best. The third factor that became very important to sustaining success is something called the support of the people. Many times I have said there is nothing like the roar of the crowd to start a rally or to give that player that extra edge.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.